Hey, it's John. Did you know a quick finger prick at home can unlock over 180 insights to slow aging and boost health? I tried True Diagnostics True Age plus True Health Test, and it gave me way more information than a regular checkup. True Health checks biomarkers like vitamins, gut health, inflammation, and toxins. True Age reveals your biological age, organ ages, and aging pace with tailored tips to optimize. My results? My body shows signs of being a few months younger than my actual age. Fitness age is 5 years below my actual age, with a strong grip and gait, but a slightly fast aging pace that I'm trying to tweak with better sleep and stress management. It's backed by Ivy League scientists. Just prick, mail, and get a clear report in 2 to 4 weeks. Serious about longevity? Visit TrueDiagnostic.com. Use code Harris for 20% off your order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code H-A-R-R-I-S. Your future self will thank you.
A leisurely walk in the woods is no longer allowed in Nova Scotia, and it may not be for the rest of the summer.
Effective 4 p.m. today, we're telling Nova Scotians, stay out of the woods.
Nova Scotia's premier announced today a ban on activities in the forest because of extreme dry conditions and the risk of wildfires.
Hiking, camping, fishing, and the use of vehicles in the woods are not permitted. Trail systems through woods are off limits.
At these walking trails in the heart of Sydney, some agreed with the move while others didn't.
As long as you're not starting a fire or smoking, you know, that kind of thing, you should be able to walk there.
It kind of sucks for the campers and anybody out tenting, but it's probably necessary.
At these wooded trails in Coxeth, the entrance is blocked off. The people who run the trails say while they understand the province's move, it's also unfortunate.
So there's some expansions and upgrades that we had hoped to finish this summer that, depending on how long this goes, it will be slowed down.
According to the province, the penalty for violators will be the same as it is for the burn ban put in last week, $25,000, though camping is allowed at registered campsites and some exceptions will be made for work in the woods.
So they can get a permit to carry out their operations on Crown lands. They may need to operate at night, which can take place.
The premier says with nothing but more dry weather expected in the coming days, the move is being made now to try and avoid a major wildfire like the one outside of Halifax 2 years ago.
We've had briefings from Environment Canada about the near-term forecast, and there is no significant rain in sight.
As for how long this ban on being in the woods...
Welcome to the Conversations That Matter podcast. That was a bit of an abrupt end there, but that's a crazy... video, and I figured I'd share it with you. I saw it on X this morning. My brother shared it, actually, and I didn't at first. I was confused, I'll put it that way, because he said, well, you can't go in the woods in this region in Canada. I thought, go in the woods? You can't. I mean, this sounds like COVID again, right? 2020. Even during COVID, though, you could still go in the woods. And so obviously, then I watched it, and sure enough, this is something I'm dealing with, though, right now in the state of New York, because for the last 4 days, 5 days, we've had smoke, and it's actually limited me. I've wanted to take my bike out for a little ride because that's how I try to keep in shape, and I can't. It's not really safe to go for a jog or to go on a bike ride. I mean, you could, but you're going to get particulate matter in your lungs, and everything's hazy. You can't see the mountains. And it's because there's like, go on a line if you're curious about this and go to a map of air quality. Your phone should have one. If you have an iPhone, you just go to the weather and click on the map, and then you overlay it with the air quality. And Canada is just burning up. It's so bad. And a lot of the places that it's burning, the place actually where the fire is probably the worst, because there's several fires, is on the middle point of Hudson Bay towards the west. Well, how many people live off of Hudson Bay, on the western side of Hudson Bay? I mean, it's not that many. So I don't think that banning people from walking in the woods, I mean, and what are you going to do, right? Unless you have a very extensive way of monitoring who goes in the woods, then the people who want to burn down the forest are going to do it anyway. They don't, I mean, they can go on the edge of the woods if they want, but if they wanted to really get deep in there, who's going to stop them? Who's going to, you know, have cameras on all the trees? I mean, what kind of dystopian mechanism would you use to prevent this kind of thing? it's hard. You have to do what Canadians and I suppose everyone in mountainous regions has. Well, I don't even know if they need to be mountainous. That's just where I've seen them. But everyone in areas that have extensive forests, you have a fire tower. You have people that's their job. They watch. They try to find. Now, maybe they don't need that now because they have satellites and all the rest. But banning people in a residential area from walking in the woods, I'm sure that's really going to stop your forest fires, especially the ones out in areas where there's hardly any people. And all that does is prevent the people who actually do have good intent from going out and enjoying the woods. And maybe that makes some of them more violent. You ever thought of that? Maybe that'll make them stir crazy, like what we experienced in 2020. It's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. And it's so interesting to me that Canada is so close. I can drive there from where I am sitting right now and be there in, I don't know, 5 hours, maybe. It's not that far. And it obviously shares a very extensive border with the United States. And you think for a while, like you think if you go to places like the Adirondack Mountains, but well, good segue, where we're going to have our men's retreat, musicandmasculinity.com, if you want to sign up. But you go there and you're going to meet a lot of Canadians, even French-speaking Canadians, because they like to hike there as well. And so I'm used to seeing Canadians, and you don't think a lot of it. You think, oh, they're similar, right? They have maybe some differences. They pronounce things differently, and some of them speak French. But then you get a story like this, and you're like, nah, they're different. They're different. That's not even the most liberal state in the United States, at least at this point, would implement a policy like that. It's just insane to me. I don't want to go to New York, John, says Cosmic Treason. I don't blame you. I do not blame you. But all I ask is once a year, right? Rush Limbaugh asked not much. He said 3 hours a day. It's all he asked. That's it. Or was it Sean Hannity? One of them used to say that, which I thought that's kind of a commitment, actually. 3 hours a day. He's like, that's all we ask. It's not much. Well, all I ask is just one weekend out of the year. And we don't have those restrictions. So you actually can come and enjoy the outdoors. And it's going to be a great time. Musicandmasculinity.com is the website if you'd like to sign up. Have several people signing up just this week. And we have a great slate of speakers. If you haven't heard some of these guys, then you're in for a treat, because they're all excellent speakers and they have great information to share. We have Pastor Tim Bushong, Pastor Danny Steinmeier. We have Mark Steinmeier. You might see the resemblance there. He's actually the music minister at Danny Steinmeier's church. And then A.D. Robles and myself, as always, and my own dad is going to be there, Scott Harris. So it'll be good. And we'll do whatever we do, right? We'll do kayaking. We'll do fishing. We'll do hiking and all the great things. I mean, some people play basketball. It's really probably one of the best, if not the best, Christian camp facility I've ever seen. And that's why we've never stopped. It wasn't my first choice when we started doing the men's retreat. I wanted to actually find a place that was a little more rustic. And because this is like a nice hotel. I'll put it that way. Not only do you have running water, obviously, but everything's heated. Everything's new. Everything's comfortable. Beachfront bungalows. You can choose if you want to be alone. You can be alone. The food is stellar. I've never had better camp food. So we just, after that experience, it wasn't my first choice, but it was the only place available last minute. And I decided after that, well, we got to do this every year. Camp of the Woods, it's worth it. It's hard to get there for some people because you got to get into the mountains. But once you get there, it's totally worth it. And if you're someone who's coming with your son, I would highly suggest taking a few days off and maybe just by yourself, you and your son, or if you're coming with a friend, go off into the woods, the way that Americans do, not Canadians, apparently, and enjoy yourself beyond the conference, because you want to take advantage of that time. There's amazing things to do in the Adirondacks, high peaks, history. There's water sports and just, I don't know, it's just a wonderful place. So look forward to seeing you there, musicandmasculinity.com. And I think there's contact info there, too, if you want to ask any questions. But that's where you would sign up. Okay, well, let's, Cosmic Treason also mentions that Tim Bushong is known for the metal version of A Mighty Fortress, for those who don't know, which plays on Radio Free Geneva. That's very true. If you listen to James White, he does this Radio Free Geneva thing, and Tim Bushong is the opening voice. He's also the one who composed the opening for the podcast. When I don't go live, when I'm just posting a video, I'll often tag on his little intro, which I came up with that. Actually, a friend of mine kind of came up with it. I added to it. And I just had my guitar on my phone. And then Tim Bushong sent me this great professional recording. So I've used his since 2020, at least. And he also did my album. He produced it. So Driving Down a Mountain Road. If you haven't listened to that, go check it out. So I feel like I'm plugging a lot of stuff here, but all good stuff, all good stuff. So we have a lot to talk about today, though. We're going to talk about the PCA and the Study Committee on Christian Nationalism a little bit. I've tried to do some digging, and the information I have is somewhat limited, but I think it'll be helpful if you're in the PCA, just give you some food for thought and what to expect. And then we're going to talk a little bit about this. Well, for those who aren't on X, you wouldn't know, but there's been a dust up, we'll say, about a tweet that Protestia put out there. And some of the reactions are a little unbelievable to me. We'll talk about it, but it brings up an issue that I actually do consider worth talking about, which is the prospects, especially for Gen Z men, Gen Z Christian men. We'll talk about women as well, but especially for Gen Z Christian men, what are the prospects for finding a spouse, finding a wife? I think it's a challenge, and it's more of a challenge now in some ways than it was when I was looking for that kind of thing over a decade ago. So we'll talk about that a little bit, and let's see what else. We're going to talk about Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel has decided to start doing a redesign to their Cracker Barrel country stores. And let's just say a lot of people aren't happy about it, and I can understand why. And I think it does say something about us. So we'll talk about that. And oh, I need to say these two things. Also, if you want to check out a more consolidated take on Zionism, Christian Zionism, then Judeo American Reformer and the first article right now is an article I wrote on Christian Zionism. And it took me a little while to put it together, and I tried to be very careful. There's only one thing now that I'm thinking about it that I would like to change. Maybe someone can figure it out as they're reading. It's not really inaccurate. It's more just the framing. It's such a minor thing, though, so I'm not going to do anything about it. But I did spend some time on it, and we don't do AI written articles here, right? We put the blood, sweat, and tears into it, and it's going to reflect who the author is, which is me. And I know I did a 2-hour podcast on this subject, but this is for those who want to reflect and read, and you can send this around. And I think it'll be just very illuminating and helpful. So that's out there. I also found out right before we started the show that Steve Dace, if you listen to the Steve Dace show, I'm actually looking forward to hearing what he has to say when I have a chance. He did a whole podcast on one of my articles, I think. I was asking the person who told me which one it was. I don't know if they got back to me yet. Let me see. I think it's my Red Pills Without Roots article, if I'm not mistaken. Let's see. Yes, it is that one. Okay, so that's on American Reformer as well. But the Steve Dace show today, the whole, I guess, whatever it is, 2 hours was taken up with that particular article. So I'm glad that's helpful to people out there. And there's some follow-ups that I've thought about writing, but you know, that's kind of my Rosetta Stone. That's how I think about, for those who don't know, like I did a whole show on it at the time, but it's an article that I wrote, I think it was earlier this year, maybe the spring. But I talk about kind of some of the more dissident Zoomer right circles and why there's an appeal to go in very transgressive directions. And my way of thinking through that and summarizing the strategy and evaluating it. So you can go check that out, Red Pills Without Roots at American Reformer. But I'm looking forward to hearing what Steve says. All right. Well, that said, let's see. Let's get to our first story then. I'll take a comment maybe before we get into it. Looks like people are filtering in. And someone says they're static. So just let me know if they're still static in the line. I don't want people listening to static. I want people hearing a clear, crisp voice. So just give me some feedback if you're still hearing any kind of static. Scratchy audio, someone said. That was at the beginning, but sounds good now. Okay, good, good. All right, hopefully that's still the case. Well, let's start with, do I really want to start here? Yeah, let's do PCA stuff first. I can't believe I'm thinking PCA stuff might be less controversial, but it actually might be. So We're going to start with PCA. So this is Daryl Hart. Now, I think Daryl Hart is in the PCA, if I'm not mistaken, or he's in the OPC or the PCA. I sometimes get confused because there's some cross-pollination. And I didn't know until recently they had a board or a committee that sort of, I don't know how you would put it, they credential the ordinations or something like, I'm probably botching this, but between these conservative Presbyterian denominations, there is sort of this connecting mechanism that exists. I didn't even know that until very recently, and a good friend in the PCA told me. But I'm pretty sure Daryl Hart is PCA, I think. So, no, he's OPC. Someone's saying Hart is OPC. All right, well, see, there you go. Hart is OPC. Nicholas says, all right, two people saying OPC. So, wow, this was a great intro, John. Great intro to the PCA controversy by bringing up someone from the OPC. I think it's the same mentality, though. And I know he and Presby cast, they've been going back and forth, I guess. And they have critiques of Christian nationalism, to say the least, or what they perceive to be Christian nationalism. And so one of the things Daryl Hart said, and this is just on my ex, he goes, I've seen more about Christian civilization than about Christian Lord's Day. And so I just said, let's make a deal. We return to Christian civilization and we conserve the evening service. And I think he was probably saying more than just the evening service there, but I don't know. That was the first place my head went, is that's, since I've been alive, that's gone, the way of the dodo bird. And now we have morning services at most churches, and that's about it. And what do people do with the rest of their day, right? I don't know that this is a good trend that we've, it used to be, it was more of a day of rest, and to the point businesses were all shut down. So you didn't have the option of going out and go. I mean, you could go for a Sunday drive. You could go for a hike. You could, unless you're in Canada, you could go to do recreational activities that are, I suppose you could say, non-strenuous. I mean, you might get a raised eyebrow. And in colonial America, in some places, more than a raised eyebrow if you did too much and created a stir or a commotion. But you could have a leisurely Sunday and you could focus on being with the saints and worshiping the Lord and sharing meals. And hospitality was common on that day. Generally, families would get together on that day. And I think Daryl Hart remembers that time, and I sympathize with that, right? I almost caught myself. I almost said empathize, but what's wrong with that? I could say that. I empathize because I had the last gasping breath of that civilization was my childhood. And so I get it, but why pit these two against each other? Because one and the other, they complement each other, right? I mean, the Lord's Day is obviously important, and for a number of reasons, but I think when you have a Christian civilization, then you're going to have more of a recognition of the Lord's Day. So I don't get why. I guess the critique is that the Christian nationalist types are generally not pious. So he's been saying other things. I just decided to focus on this. So we kind of went back and forth. Oh, where did we go back and forth? Now I'm trying to find it. Okay, so he says you mean medieval Christendom. And he goes back and forth with this guy named Jacob Honeycutt, who's a pretty good poster. Covenant Cut is his handle. And then I finally said, I think he's trying to say, okay, he says Ben Franklin was a great American and a decent man. And I said, I think he's trying to say that Ben wasn't an Orthodox believer, so where would he fit into the presumably Christianized society we want? If only every non-believer saw the need for prayer and financed George Whitefield, I think he'd fit in just fine. And Daryl Hart says that is correct. And Jacob Honeycutt gets in. Oh, keeps going. All right. So Daryl Hart finally says, apparently you have not considered what would have happened to Franklin if he had remained in Mather's Boston, or the differences between a Puritan and a Quaker society. Now, I do get the sense that there's some, how do I say this nice? There's a bit of an elitism there. He's looking down at Jacob Honeycutt, and you know, Jacob knows this. I know this. Maybe Daryl knows more. It's possible. But you know, I've read Albion Seed. I understand the differences between the societies. So I just said, Dr. Hart, why is it that your mind goes straight to the Puritans when I mention Christian civilization? Why can't it be a pan-Protestant project with islands of toleration for religious minorities, but with Christian defaults? I see every civil expression in our federal republic as a reflection of Christian civilization up until 1950 or so, when a saturation of measures to force secularism changed our character. He says, because of the way American Reformer promotes Cotton Mather and the way the PCA uses John Witherspoon as if he's a Puritan, much of the Christian nationalism is anti-modern. Presbys don't need to be. I just say, I've been critical of the Puritan society, but as far as being anti-modern, your literal handle is really Old Life, which is pretty funny. That is his handle. So why do I want to bring that up? Just to say this, I actually think Daryl Hart's a good historian. I respect him, to be honest with you. I think I have some of his books on my shelf, and I've certainly benefited from some of his work. I don't get exactly where this is coming from. And this is the situation. I suppose it's also in the OPC. I was going to make the case this is the PCA, but he's not in the PCA. But this is the situation also in the PCA. There's a bunch of guys, and many of them a little more seasoned, and I think probably very wise on many things, but they don't care for the enthusiasm they see around quote unquote Christian nationalism. And I think a critique of quote unquote Christian nationalism that critiques the Puritans and shows how that's out of step, at least the Puritan society will say of Mather's day, is out of step with what America became. I think that's actually pretty powerful, because it is out of step and it had to change to adapt. And go watch the 1607 Project, right? I put many critiques of Puritanism in that particular documentary. I just think you just got to be careful in my mind that, like, just because someone's rediscovering some history, and maybe some people are too bullish about it. They get excited and they have a zeal with lack of knowledge. That could be, but then you try to come beside them and you just write good articles that, as long as they're not being too belligerent, that will correct and do so in a gentle way. If you really think it's a threat, then yeah, you go whole hog. And that's basically what he's doing. He's going whole hog on this stuff. It's got to be rooted out. It's terrible. But the net is cast so broad. I mean, what a Christianized society, how many steps, let me ask you this, how many steps would it take to get from where we are now to Mather's Puritan society? Well, a number of steps, a number of stages. And as you pursue those stages, you know, banning blasphemy, for example, being a stage that we can't even really get to at this point, right? But that would be a stage you'd have to pass through. But as you pass through that stage, you're entering what, 1930s America? You're not bringing back Puritan Massachusetts when you do that. It might be a step in that direction for some, but some of these things, and most of the things debated about, are things that were universally shared among Americans. There was a universal respect for Christianity. There was a willingness to ban things like pornography and obscenity and blasphemy, things that were corrupting society because they conflicted with Christian virtue. That was everyone. That was Quakers. Everyone had mechanisms for preventing those kinds of things in. And now those mechanisms are hardly present. Maybe you have public pressure in some areas, and that's just about it. With the internet connection, everything's permissible, it seems. So I just think it's a curious thing to just go from to get scared because there's people talking about Mather's Massachusetts, and we're going to start, what are we going to do? We're going to start burning people for crimes that are ecclesiastical in nature or something. I don't think we're there, guys. I just don't, I don't know about you, but I don't think we're quite there. So that's kind of where the PCA is, in my opinion, is in, I guess, the OPC. Daryl Hart is expressing a warning, but it's just one that at this point, I don't see a reason to take it all that seriously. I'm open to people telling me whether that is something to be taken seriously. I'm willing to listen, but that's just my assessment in looking at these things. So in this context, we have, can anyone, all right, I'm going to do this real quick. We're going to get to the PCA study committee here, but Cosmic Treason asks, anyone in chat who can summarize the critiques John had of Puritans and Mather? Yeah, Cotton Mather, not so like specifically Mather. I think actually Mather did some good things. Mather's kind of a mixed bag in my mind. In general, if you watch that documentary, you'll understand more what my critiques are. I think that what happened in Puritan society, and I live on the cusp of it, by the way, I live not far from the Connecticut border. So I don't know. The contrast is just stark to me. It became a very kind of navel-gazing type of society. And there's a perfectionistic instinct and a desire to go and kind of remake the world in this image. They were on a divine mission, right? But that mission got scuttled fairly quickly. And as the Puritans lost their orthodoxy, they were replaced with people who were transcendentalists and Unitarians and all kinds of cults and that kind of thing. But they kept that that rigid kind of, I mean, we even use the term puritanical. They kept that rigidness about everything. And it led to, there is a book I have actually that makes the case that you can trace modern liberals to that. And I mean, if you look at an electoral map, that I suppose that makes sense. So there was a disposition to go and kind of sweep everyone else's porch and not just focus on your own stuff, but a critical spirit. And this could get it down into some very minute detail and not a healthy thing for society, like giving way to ideology and that kind of thing. So, man, there's so much more to say, but I got to kind of move on because that's not the topic of this podcast. So the PCA decides to do a study committee, and the study committee is on Christian nationalism and ethno-nationalism, quote unquote, which I think is one of the most redundant terms. And in this committee, you have the president. Is it the president? Is that what you call him? The leader? The moderator. Okay. Kevin DeYoung of the PCA appointing some folks. And what they're going to do, the way this can affect people is they make a recommendation about Christian nationalism. And could that potentially be adopted into PCA doctrine? Yes, but that's unlikely. What likely will happen is this will be the word from the leaders of the denomination that this is the direction of our denomination. And then it could be a hang up for people seeking ordination who are quote unquote Christian nationalists or see themselves in that vein. If it's critical of Christian nationalism. So that becomes the question. Is this going to be critical? Is this going to be fair? What is this going to be? So you have David Strain, Drew Martin, James Wood, Paul McNulty, Lance Kinzer, Steve Dowling, Jay Green, Scott Swain, and Alan Golzo. And I'm not familiar with a lot of these names, so I can't actually, and I tried to look it up. I can't give you a lot of detail about some of them, but immediately the ones I did know were all negative. So Paul McNulty immediately jumped out at me because I said, that's the president of Grove City College who was shielding all the investigation into the CRT adjacent material that was being propagated there. He denied it. I see him as a dishonest guy. I see him as a politician, not the guy you want on this kind of a committee. You have Alan Golzo, and I'm somewhat familiar with him. Alan Golzo is very critical of what he would term lost cause mythology. But what that means is for him, he is very bullish on the proposition nation stuff. So he would actually subscribe to a form of nationalism, a Lincolnian nationalism, but it's not based upon intrinsically shared tangible qualities. It's based upon shared ideals in union and freedom and equality. And I've been very critical. Again, go watch the 1607 Project, which I produced. I've been very critical of that. Or you can read Against the Waves, Christian Order in a Liberal Age. I have a chapter on this. And I think he basically continues the Jaffa tradition. But in so doing, one of his favorite things to do is just bash the Confederacy, bash Confederate heroes. Robert E. Lee was a traitor. Any Southern sympathy just seems to be, in his mind, it's compensating for something. It's lies. It's, you know, the Abbeville Institute has a lot of critiques of him. So I wouldn't expect him to be very friendly towards the version or versions of Christian nationalism that are sort of in vogue now, I suppose, like Stephen Wolf's Christian nationalism, because it rejects the proposition nation. And then you have some of these other guys. So I looked into so I should probably show you this first. I noticed also the praise for this. So John Fee is praising it. It looks like a strong committee, he says. Now, John Fee, very, very critical. How do I say this about, like, there's a history that sort of goes back, because John Fee is a heavy critic of Liberty University. So when I was there, I got to see sometimes John Fee stuff. We had to read John Fee books. I've had to read John Fee. He has a decent book on historiography, Christian historiography, but he is also of that same variety of Golzo. It's proposition nation stuff. He's at least an honest historian about his book on Christian America, but he seems to, in my mind, just get unhinged when he starts talking about modern political stuff. He hates Trump, right? He is very critical of the Christian right in general. He was defending Grove City College with Paul McNulty when all that stuff was happening, all the exposure, some of which I did. And then you have Lincoln Duncan, you know, the guy who co-wrote Woke Church. He also thinks that this is a great, impressive, he says, study committee. Those things don't give me very much hope. So I found some articles. James R. Wood is on the committee. I didn't know a lot about him. I read an article from him the other day that I thought was a little bit, I don't want to like judge the man just by this one article, but it seemed like a little bit silly to me. And it was trying to make the case that like the church is, I don't want to botch it. I'll probably misrepresent it, but like it was something along the lines of the church being a competitive ethnicity. That once you become a Christian, you become part of a real tangible community, and it's an ethnicity, and sort of like as a, I guess, an alternative to natural ethnicities. But anyway, in this particular article, this is about Christian nationalism, and he says a modest defense of a form of Christian nationalism. So you may be tempted to think, okay, so he's pro-Christian nationalist. And if you go to the bottom, he concludes, he goes, connecting one's love for and loyalty to the nation with this commandment, I guess he's talking about Exodus 20, is instructive in terms of the temptation to idolize the nation. The Bible complements this command to honor one's parents with Christ teaching that in comparison with our ultimate loyalty to him, we are to hate our parents. Christ made clear that he did not come to abolish the law. He calls us to honor our parents. The point here is that the proper ordering of our loves and loyalties. Okay. So, I mean, I guess I agree with that, right? We are to put first things first. So we avoid the idolatry of worshiping created things above the creator. But to resist becoming idolaters does not mean we must become iconoclasts. Created realities can serve an analogous signpost. I don't really know what he's talking about. Let me skip towards the end here. Properly ordering our loves does not mean loving God and hating everything else. That is Manichaean. Rather, we are to love created realities in, for, and unto God. This applies to our respective nations. I really don't know what his point is exactly. Like, it's, you read the whole article, it just seems to me like he's trying to straddle a bit. Like, he seems to think there are these bad forms and good forms of quote unquote Christian nationalism. And there's common understanding. So he defines two common understandings. One is Christian influence on politics, which he seems to be okay with. And then the other one is having an inflated view of a nation. So if those are the two options and you're saying, oh yeah, like you could have Christian values, that's not really what the current Christian nationalism debate is over. The current Christian nationalism debate is more over whether or not a country or a nation should be self-consciously Christian, whether that should be part of their identity. That's really the main crux of it. So when it comes to that, he seems to be against it. And then we have this guy, Jay Green. Okay, so Jay Green wrote an article about Christian nationalism as well. And in that article, let's just go to the summarization at the end. He says, he's talking about another article that he says demonstrates that Christian nationalism violates some of America's most fundamental enduring values. The primacy it gives to very peculiar versions of Christianity undercuts America's longstanding commitment to liberty of conscience and freedom of expression. In similar fashion, putting the thumb on the scale for Christians and Christian principles begins to disintegrate our similarly important commitment to equality. So this sounds like the same thing. It's more prop nation stuff. In the second, more substantial critique, another article that he's quoting here demonstrates the many ways that American Christian nationalism subverts, corrupts, and contradicts Christian values. So he's critical of it. That's all I know. So I ask you this, based on that, what kind of a verdict do you think the PCA will give? I don't know. But this study committee looks to be critical of quote unquote Christian nationalism. And there's no one I recognize on it that they could have pulled someone in like Zach Garris or Stephen Wolf, or I mean, who else would be a good, you know, they could have brought Timon Klein. Anyone from American Reformer would have been good to bring in. They don't have to even keep it PCA, but they didn't do that. So I don't know why. I don't have an answer for it other than, you know, the obvious speculation would be that this is already a stacked deck. And it may be, it may very well be a stacked deck. I was hoping for, I mean, you need critics on a, I suppose, if you're going to do a committee, you do need some critics, but you definitely need people who are advocates and supporters. As long as it's not a heretical movement, you'd think that would be the wise thing to get a broad committee. But I'm kind of suspicious as to whether that's actually happening here. So little PCA news for you. I don't think the term Christian nationalism is being used that much anymore, to be quite honest with you. As I'm talking about this, I'm realizing I haven't even used that term in a while. It seems like the term New Christian Right is gained more steam. I don't even know if I want to use that term anymore. I didn't use it much, but I did. I mean, I did a whole interview with someone about this. Maybe I did two of them where we talk about the New Christian Right. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm part of that. But the internet changes so fast and these terms get thrown around so quickly. And I don't know that I'm willing to put my name behind much that's any of these unstable elements. I prefer saying I'm a Christian and I'm a conservative. And if you want to know more, I can explain it to you. If you want to say paleo conservative or older conservative, that's fine. If you want to older ideas, that's pre-modern stuff, especially. It's what I like. But Christian nationalism still in the crosshairs, it seems like, in the PCA. All right, let's talk about Cracker Barrel a little bit. So there's this article that the Federalist put out, and its title is Cracker Barrel is another regional hallmark that's fallen victim to monocultural carpetbaggers. And I love the fact that carpetbaggers is still a term of derision in politics. I mean, this is a uniquely Southern term from the war days, post-war days, of the people from the North who had come down and tried to take advantage of the opportunity that there was an impoverished people that are desperate, and they became victimizers. And it's still a word used for outside forces that come in politically and disrupt and take advantage of. And so Hayden Daniel wrote this, and he calls Cracker Barrel's remodeling soulless. And one of the people, and I think it was Matt Borush, he said in the Signal group for the Patreons that this looked like the change that took place in First Baptist Church of Knightdale, which I think actually kinda. So here's, so you can see, let me see if I can, I don't think I can make that bigger. That's just a little video, and it shows you that it's white in the interior and it's almost like a diner setup. It's very bright. There's still nostalgic things on the wall, but they are much more organized and it's just much more modern. It's not like a bunch of old stuff strewn out with the warm tones. I don't know if this is the only one he put, because I saw another one that looked like they even had booth seating like a diner, but I can't find that. So he says that the executives made this decision and they're getting rid of the old-timey charm. And it's obviously an idealized version of yesteryear's America, but in a natural, sincere way. That was the old Cracker Barrel. Now, by contrast, the new aesthetic tries to pay lip service to the same sense of wizened charm, but ultimately comes off as a spiritually sterile, manufactured, and hollow. Every decorative item on the wall in the video above looks like it could have come from Chip and Joanna Gaines' hearth and hand line at Target. That's a good point. Yes, it looks like the Gaines. It looks like every other middle grade sit-down restaurant. Yeah, this is sad to me because Cracker Barrel, in my opinion, is the one of the last kind of vestiges that you will run into if you go through public education in many places and you're consuming entertainment. Where else are you going to run into any sense of history of this country? Cracker Barrel is one of the places that you actually could. You could walk in there and there's a whole bunch of old stuff on the wall that were probably obtained by them during antique sales or something, or estate sales. They went in there and they got yokes that used to actually sit on top of oxen, and guitars that people actually did play in rocking chairs throughout this country, and pictures of families from the 1800s and farm tools that were actually used to produce the food that our grandparents ate. I mean, it's a connection to the past, the music, the atmosphere. It all connects you. Cracker Barrel didn't play modern music. If it ever played new stuff, it was stuff that sounded like it could have been old. It was people that were continuing a tradition that was already in existence, not creating something innovative. The products that you would buy at Cracker Barrel would be nostalgic candies and sodas and old games, that some of which you can't really get anywhere else. They're not played. I think of those little triangle games on the tables, right? I mean, for those who have not been to a Cracker Barrel, that's your introduction to Cracker Barrel. But I always loved it for that reason, because I felt like I was stepping back into, I'll just be honest, I connected it to some of my older relatives in Mississippi who were farmers, and most of them are in heaven at this point. But when I would go down there as a kid for family reunions, it's like walking into one of their barns, seeing all these tools strewn out, and the kind of decor that they had, the kind of old pictures they had. I mean, that's what Cracker Barrel felt like to me. And it was kind of cool that I could even go in a place in the north. I could go into Pennsylvania or Massachusetts if there's a Cracker Barrel there, and I can sort of set foot into that environment. And so I appreciated it for that. But yeah, that's, and the food you ate, I forgot the food too, right? The food is like cornbread and chicken fried steak. And it's this stuff that our ancestors conquered this country. That's the kind of food that was in their bellies. High calorie, good Southern fried food. So anyway, it's gone now in 40 stores. So I'm hoping that Cracker Barrel reverses, but here's the broad cultural commentary on this. We've seen so many other restaurants go through this kind of transformation, this modernized, sanitized thing where they have to look, I don't know, more sterile is probably the right word for it. It's just less character, less humanity, more. It looks like robots could have invented it. It looks like AI just invented it. It's
going online without ExpressVPN is like not having a case for your phone. Most of the time, you're probably fine, but all it takes is one slip, one hack, and you'll wish you spent a few bucks to protect yourself. Every time you hop on Wi-Fi at a cafe, hotel, or airport, your data's at risk. Hackers don't need to be geniuses, just some cheap gear, and even a kid could swipe your passwords, bank details, or credit card info. It's no wonder CNET and The Verge rate ExpressVPN the number one. I use ExpressVPN when I'm on public Wi-Fi, like when I'm traveling or grabbing coffee. Last month, I was at the airport, and knowing my data was safe gave me peace of mind to browse without worry. It's a must for me because I refuse to let hackers mess with my personal info. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/conversations. That's expressvpn.com/conversations to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months free. expressvpn.com/conversations.
We are losing kind of already in so many sectors a sense of ourself. And it's good to have reminders of that, not just modern print productions of a picture of something that used to be like a Sunoco sign, but it's, you could tell it was printed using all kinds of filters and stuff. And it's a picture. Like, we need actual, like, give me a piece of the sign, give me something that's tangible and real, that give me a real past. Right. So, I hope that Cracker Barrel receives some negative feedback and that they reverse course, because it's one of the last places that still had that sense of tradition. T. James Boone says it's incredibly iconic or ironic. Sorry, I'm still thinking about Cracker Barrel. That just as a demand is building for a return and renewal to our heritage and American roots, Cracker Barrel is killing itself by embracing modernity that will soon be rejected. You know, I hope you're right about that. I don't want to get too negative, but I have wondered, even with guys who are more on the new Christian right, like, for example, are older American symbols coming back? You know, Betsy Ross flag, Gadsden flag, Pine Tree flag, even if you're in the South, you know, emblems that represent your Confederate heritage emblem. I mean, I don't care really what they are, but are older American symbols coming back that are unique to this place? Or are the symbols of the new Christian right? And this isn't like, I'm not meaning for this to be this isn't a black and white criticism. I'm not saying any of what I'm about to say, well, some of it's wrong. I'm not saying all of it's wrong. But what symbols do you see more of if you log on to X, for example, and if that's your world, okay? I mean, it's going to be more like Jerusalem crosses. It's going to be iron crosses. It's going to be, in some cases, swastikas now. It's stuff that, it's all foreign, basically. And, you know, I do wonder about that. I really thought the kickback against wokeness would probably be a restoration of American identity and heritage. And that's kind of what I put my labors behind. But I don't know anymore. I don't know exactly. I know there are some guys that are, but I just encourage you, if you don't know what happened underneath your feet, go read the signs, read the books, figure it out. I think it'll be enriching and it'll draw you closer to the land that you live on, and you'll want to preserve it more. You'll be a better steward of it. So, all right, there's my gentle critique there. We have a comment from Javier, who says, in other restaurant news, In-N-Out is building a headquarters in Tennessee, you know, just in case. Javier, you're trying to get me to move to Tennessee, and I'm afraid it might be working. That's I've joked about this. I've said before, if they had an In-N-Out, it would be so much more appealing. Well, now the headquarters is moving there. An iconic California chain may be leaving. Here's hoping their burgers are really good. Oh, yeah, it's the best. I have no question in my mind. And like, I go to Five Guys whenever I can. You know, I love the Culver's when I go out to Midwest. I love my, what do I get down South? Man, I'm trying to think. Cookout, I guess. I get Cookout probably. Sometimes I've gone to, like, you know, White Castles and Crystals before, the little burgers. Those are kind of good. They're fun, but I like my butter burger. I feel like I'm forgetting something that's really good. Well, anyway, I don't care. Yeah. Whataburger. I'm sorry. Whataburger was a bit of a disappointment. I'm not going to lie. It's not bad, but kind of like going to Burger King in my mind with mustard, extra mustard. I just offended all the Texans. I think In-N-Out is the best. Sorry. Maybe I'm a California kid and I was born there, and maybe it's just in my blood or something, but that's what I think. And if they could just keep moving east, that would be great. All right. Well, we're going to get to some truly controversial things. In case that might have been the most controversial element of the podcast, getting into the burgers there. As a Midwesterner, Culver's is fantastic, says Stryker. It really is. And their root beer, their vanilla. You got to have vanilla in root beer. Oh, there's this place in Connecticut. I just remember they have the best root beer, homemade root beer with vanilla in it. It's called Sycamore, and it's outside of Danbury. And they got pretty good burgers, and it's the Dagwood, you know, theme. So their prize burger is the Dagwood. And then the Blondie is their, I think, the one with like cheese on it, their cheeseburger. And it's a car hop. And that's pretty good. I'm getting hungry. Okay. All right. We got to move on. Let's talk about this.
and this might be the closing thing we talk about, because I want to have a broader conversation. Let me set this up. We have a broader conversation here about Gen Z. And Gen Z is, I think, in several pickles. Last time I talked about Gen Z, I talked about how they have more debt, credit card debt, than any other generation, which is crazy since they're just starting out. And there's some positive things to look at, like right-wing men seem to be higher, but I've questioned, like, what kind of right-wing? What are we looking at? Is it compatible with socialism? Is it socially conservative right-wing? Is it Christian values? And it's polling's conflicted, but it seems like, and I've talked about this in previous episodes, there is more of a softness on abortion. There is more of a hardness, though, or a enthusiasm to stop immigration, especially illegal immigration. So it's a bit of a mixed bag, but I am a cautious optimist on this. I see some good things, but I also see some things that really kind of scare me. Not in like I'm shaking in my boots, but just you have a generation that has been raised on technology, many of them coming from unstable backgrounds, which is part of the reason they want to find a sure footing somewhere, which is good. But there's just a lot of damage to overcome. The church has more than enough work cut out for themselves. So, get busy, be in ministry, because now is the time. And there seems to be somewhat of an interest in religion. I just don't know. We don't know yet what this translates into. Bible sales are up right now. Is it going to translate into more church attendance, though? And I mean, this has been my thing for a while, because I'm used to years ago hearing about revivals and so forth, usually in charismatic circles. And we had a revival. We had this many people got saved, this many people raised their hand, whatever it is. And my test was, okay, that's great. Praise God. Let's see what happens to that region. If that region, if like voting patterns change and cultural values change and bars and strip clubs start losing money, and right, that's the thing that is going to indicate there has been a change in fruit. And so I don't mean to be the skeptical, quote unquote, Calvinist on this, but I, again, cautious, but optimistic. That's kind of my thing. And I feel that way about Gen Z too. So they have a lot to deal with. One of them is going to be the most fundamental human activity, finding a wife for a male, or if you're a woman, finding a husband and raising family. Because if we don't have that, we don't even have a civilization to continue. It's the most important thing for a civilization to continue. You kind of have to have babies, right? I just had this discussion with someone the other day, and we were talking about, like, they were talking about IQ levels and so forth, and had different populations have different IQ averages and what this means. And anyway, one of the things, though, I said, look, you know, go to, like, I just did a trip to Maine. So drive through states like New Hampshire, Vermont, and Massachusetts, and you will find, if you take an IQ survey or something, very high IQs, right? Some of the highest. And in fact, if you go to, like, Montpelier, I think, there's trans flags everywhere. I see no kids. I think the only kids I saw was an Asian looking couple. They had some kids. I didn't see any other kids, but I see tons of, you know, the descendants of Puritans, the white people who live there. But they're not propagating themselves. They're not having children. And I don't know what good their IQ does them. If they're high IQ, if they're smart, they're doing about the dumbest thing possible if they want to keep their civilization going. And that's kind of my view. That's like, you had one job. Like, that's the first job you have. Get married, have kids. If you want to see your civilization, you know, keep going, right? And not everyone has this option available to them. I understand. I just, in a chat, and some young men shared that they are getting it up into their 30s and still haven't found anyone. And that's something for us to pray for. I know there's also young ladies in that circumstance who are getting older. And so I don't mean to be insensitive to anyone, but it's, you know, get yourself out there, put in the work, he who finds a wife finds a good thing. So find, look, put in some effort, obviously. And I know some guys are, and it's still been hard. The conditions, though, are not very favorable right now. And I'm going to take you through some stats. But here's the flashpoint. Here's the tweet that was heard around the world this morning. Maybe not around the world. It's only got 2.3K likes. But in the Christian world, in the Christian bubble world, Protestia says this. Better to marry a former OnlyFans model who has come to know the depths of her sin and the mercy of the Lord than an unkissed virgin with a haughty look and a proud heart. I'll read it one more time. Better to marry a former OnlyFans model who has come to know the depths of her sin and the mercy of the Lord than an unkissed virgin with a haughty look and a proud heart. Now this, I was a little surprised, to be quite honest with you, after I already posted my support of this. Let's see here. I said, this should be a no-brainer for a Christian. We believe in sanctification. And then I quickly realized that people were not having it. So I said, people are failing to grasp past versus present tense and binary comparison versus ideal setting. In other words, there's a past tense, someone who is used to be an OnlyFans model is being compared with someone who is presently prideful and haughty. So that's a difference that needs to be taken into account. One is previous sin, one is present sin, ongoing sin. It doesn't tell you the degree in this hypothetical. And again, I probably wouldn't have tweeted this. It's, you know, Twitter's hard because it's like sound bites, right? So it's better to probably, and actually Protestia did do what I'm about to say. It's better to put out a longer, more qualified statement on advice for dating, courtship, etc. But this is what they put out. And I just thought it was the most uncharitable reads on this. And I saw most of them after I posted my support for it. And the second thing I said is, you know, the binary comparison versus ideal setting. So meaning it's limited to, this is a comparison between two things. If you only were limited to two different things, two choices, and one is you're a guy who needs to get married, and there is someone who is a former OnlyFans model who has come, and I guess this was a confusion for some people. I thought this was obvious. And Protestia later said, actually in their thread, they said, this is obvious. This is a Christian we're talking about. But I thought some people didn't see that. But you have an OnlyFans model who used to be an OnlyFans. They're not that anymore. Such were some of you, right? And they have come to know the Lord and they're Christian now. And the only other option is an unkissed virgin, but she's got a haughty look and a proud heart. And so I kind of assume that basically it's one's a Christian with a past, one's a non-Christian who's in ongoing sin. And it just seems obvious to me. Obviously, we believe in sanctification. Now, I'm also thinking, for those who don't know, I'm thinking about OnlyFans, and I don't know I've never been on the OnlyFans website. I don't plan to go there. So I don't know. I really just don't even know exactly what happens. My assumption is, what I've read is, girls are doing things in front of a camera and you can interact. You can tell them to do things you want to see. I'll leave it there. And it doesn't necessarily mean they're having a intimate relationship on the screen. They could be doing the kinds of things that, you know, I'm trying to say this in a sensitive way for kids that might be in the car. They could be doing it in a way that's provocative, but they're alone. We'll put it that way. So that's kind of my take. And I don't know where this person, obviously, this is a hypothetical, right? So this could be someone who might not, it might even be a technical virgin, but has put stuff online that is terrible, obviously. Naylor Ray has become, I think, the biggest example, the most popular or famous example of someone who was an OnlyFans model, who made tons of money and then came to know the Lord, and she quit all of it. And she's been platformed at places like Turning Point USA. Now, that's probably not a prudent thing to immediately platform someone. I think it's now been 2 years, though. And from what I understand, her message is basically just speaking out against her previous life. A lot of people get very angry at this, think she has no business being platformed anywhere. I don't have a promise she's going to give her testimony, to be quite honest. I think that could actually be a powerful thing. But yeah, she's not, she really can't be a, it's going to take time before being anything more than that, I suppose. So anyway, some of the reactions to this were just kind of
off the wall, in my opinion. And I want to share some of those and then just give you a few thoughts that I had. So let's see. Let's just do this live since I have the website pulled up. So some of the big, let's see. So I want to see the ones that have like a lot of responses. And there's people I even, you know, respect and stuff that are responding. So it's a little awkward, but here's one. Okay. This is such an odd thing to me, right? Involuntarily celibate, incels. I did not hear the word incel till like 2 days ago. I didn't even know what it was. I guess it's someone who's involuntarily celibate. Why we have to have these categories for identity categories is beyond me. Just say I'm single. Like, just say, I don't understand, like, it smacks of like the 400 genders thing, right? Like, it's just weird. But that this account says, this is definitely not the way. She will never love you if she's been with many other guys. Well, let me ask you, as a Christian, is that true? Never? There's no way someone who's been on OnlyFans can ever love you if you marry her, because she's been with other guys. So she can never love you, ever. That should be abhorrent to Christians. It really should. Like, God can't sanctify that person. That's a sin that the Holy Spirit can't overcome. The word of God can't penetrate that heart. Like, what's the problem here? And there's a little cartoon with it. I understand there's a wisdom element to all this. You may not want to. It's not ideal necessarily, right? Like I said before, like, we have to, you know, people are comparing the ideal to it. Like, that's not ideal. That's not natural, or that's not the template God laid down or something. It's, of course not. It's sin. But here's the problem. In Gen Z land and millennial land too, especially once you start getting up into the 30s, how many girls are left, or guys for that matter? How many guys are left that are even virgins? Right? This is kind of a big deal. If you want your civilization to continue, I've seen a bunch of guys say, I would just not get married. I just wouldn't get married. I wouldn't have kids. I don't know if that's even I don't even know if that's a possible path for us. If we're going to continue civilization, I just don't know. Obviously, we should raise up godly daughters and sons so we don't have this issue. Once people are getting into their 20s and they're broken by all these relationships, sometimes it's in their teens. But you have to deal with reality where we live. The stats that I'm about to show you are kind of frightening when it comes to this. You got to go where the Lord wills, right? And, you know, I would hope that everyone is able to marry someone. I hope that everyone has a situation like I've had. Not everyone's going to have that. And there are different situations that the Lord comes into and he brings his grace. And we'll look at some Bible verses that speak to this directly. But that is a very standard reaction to this. Let's see. There was some quote tweets that were getting a lot of traction. Let's see if we can see if you post engagements, quote tweets. Okay. Let's see if we can find some that have a lot of views on them. Here's Crusader Pepe says, the 2010 church designed to pander to millennials has nothing to offer men. Now, before even reading the rest of it, this is Protestia he's dunking on. He's about to ratio Protestia, which, like, does Protestia represent the 2010 church? Protestia has been one of the most critical outlet of modern Christian innovation out there. Like, it's a little funny to me, but they expect you, I guess Protestia speaks for them now. Protestia is speaking for J.D. Greer and all the rest. They expect you to marry a former prostitute and likely be divorced, cheated on, and disrespected. Well, it's not ideal. No one wants that. It's possible in certain circumstances you may be marrying someone who is not a virgin, and because there's just not a lot of them by the time you get to a marriageable age, unfortunately, and you have people converting to Christianity, and it's who's around you, right? But no one's like forced. No one wants this. No one's forcing this. Certainly Protestia isn't trying to normalize this. There may be places that are, but it's not Protestia.
They have women embrace feminism. They have, yeah, Protesti is having women embrace feminism, but biblically, so they feel good. This is the therapeutic gospel. I mean, I look at this, I don't see any gospel. To even bring this into a gospel category is kind of odd to me. It's an ethics thing. The only thing, the way a gospel, the gospel relates to this would be, that I can see, is the gospel, it does a transforming work in the heart of an individual so that they are now being sanctified and changed. So that was one. Let's see. There's, I could probably just go all day with some of these reactions to this. I don't want to focus on ones that haven't gotten a lot of traction, though. I'd rather focus on the things. Let's see. I guess, yeah, mine's up there now. Some of these guys are friends, though, and I don't actually want to single anyone out. I just, I think it's being either misread. I don't know what's going on. Maybe someone in the chat can explain to me why people are losing their mind over this tweet. Okay. We're just going to sort of leave it there, I suppose. Let me bring you some Bible verses, some points I want to make, and then some stats. Actually, we'll do stats first. No, we'll do stats last. We'll do Bible verses first. And then I will get to some of your comments. So some Bible verses that I think immediately in my mind applied. One is from Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14 says, "And he also told his parable to some people who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and viewed others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and then the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and was praying this to himself, 'God, I thank you. I'm not like the other people, the swindlers, unjust adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes. All of that I get.' But the tax collector, standing some distance away, was even unwilling to lift his eyes to heaven, but was beating his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, the sinner. I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but he who humbles himself will be exalted.'" Tell you what, guys, this is the only hope I have. Is in this verse. That's the only hope I have. It screams at me if I ever read a verse like this. I cannot be like the Pharisee. I just can't. I deserve punishment for my sin. And the only hope I have is that God's mercy is enough. And that if I cast myself on his mercy, he'll catch me. And I'm not even doing the casting. That's the only hope. The Pharisee who prays to himself, who has pride, that's the chief sin here, right? He says he has pride, but his pride is manifested in saying, "I'm glad I'm not like these other people." One of the categories is adulterer. And there's a self-righteousness there. And this is a constant critique that Jesus makes of the Pharisees. No, this does not mean at all that Jesus is saying that adultery is not sinful, that none of these things are sinful. Of course they are. Or that they don't have natural consequences. Of course they do. You marry someone who's in deep debt, that's your debt. You marry someone who's sexually deviant, you're going to have emotional issues you need to work through. And it'll come into your marriage. It's going to be hard. It's going to be maybe a more uphill climb than it would have been. You marry someone with, name whatever sin you want. Drug abuse, there's going to be problems that you will likely bring into a marriage. Are you aware of those things? That's a very important thing for marriage counseling. Sometimes it's not worth it. That's very possible. Sometimes it's just not something that you can handle. If someone's in crushing debt and there's no possibility of getting out of it, I mean, that's something to take into account when you're going to marry someone. If someone is, so damaged from previous sinful choices, they might even need their time. They may need time to get out of that hole, get counseling, or marriage may not be the thing that you, and it may not be in your unique circumstance, the thing. No one's forcing this on you, right? If you're a single guy listening, no one is forcing you to go marry some former OnlyFans person at all. But it's, the question is, these are prudential questions to ask. Right. The principle is God changes sinners. That's the principle. The prudential aspect is the application of how does that fit in with
a specific decision to marry a specific person. And that's where the marriage counseling office is for. That's where you go for those answers to those questions. But absolutely, God can change people, right? 1 Corinthians 6, 10 through 11, nor thieves, nor the covetous, nor drunkards, revilers, swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. Such were some of you. You were washed, you were sanctified, you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and the Spirit of our God. So do we believe that? Do we believe that someone's actually washed? Like, really, they're washed, they're sanctified when they come to Christ. Yeah, they might need to learn a new pattern of life and live in it for a while, but do we actually believe this or not? Are you a new creation? Or are you still marked by these previous things? Proverbs 8:13 says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance in the evil way, and the perverted mouth I hate. I only bring that up to say, you know, I saw all these things about how pride is a lesser sin, or it's not as important when making a decision about marriage, or it's more nebulous. You can't actually verify whether someone has pride. I don't know why people are saying that. It certainly is less cut and dry than you did a specific sexual act. But pride certainly manifests itself, and God does hate it. And we are to mark people who are prideful. It's in just about every vice list in the New Testament. I don't understand this, like, we can't really find it. It's not as important, or it's more easy to correct pride. Sometimes it's not, actually. Sometimes it's not. Like the idea that pride doesn't do irreparable damage, but these things do. It depends on the level of pride. And pride's behind a lot of other sins. So I don't get that one. I don't get that one. But yes, it could be that if someone has a bit of an arrogant streak, which is maybe what people are assuming, that that is not as egregious as having a rendezvous on camera, we'll say. So, but these are circumstantial things. Okay, so those are some of the verses that I wanted to read. Now, some of the stats that I wanted to just share with you that show the conditions, some of these we don't have updated stats for. This is from 2023, the end of 2023. But at that time, 37% of Gen Z survey respondents said they haven't had sex yet. So you look at the stats, millennials, it's only 11% has never had sex. So I don't know what the stats are now. I would assume as time has gone on, that number has probably gone down. But that just means, though, that you are... your options are limited, right? And it could be, depending on where you are, you may not have available the ideal that you would like as a man or a woman, to be honest with you. Gen Z sexting a lot more, but are you surprised? This is from 2019. So this is kind of an old study, so I kind of take it with a grain of salt. But according to a study, Generation Z is sexting like none other. The research done by Match found that nearly 40% of 18 to 22-year-olds have sent nude pictures via text. That's kind of bonkers to me. That means they're like taking pictures of themselves and sending it to other people of themselves naked. I don't understand why it's that high. I don't know what it would be now, but that's kind of startling. And then you have the collapse of marriage among Gen Z. Just over half of all Gen Z men and women will ever marry, according to a new analysis of marriage data from the Office of National Stats. Present trends, 58% of Gen Z women and 56% of Gen Z men will ever marry, compared to 56 to 67% of millennials. So, and I know I didn't pull it up, but I know the marriage age for men is always older. So it's kind of, if you're a man in particular, like, this is kind of a stacked deck, depending on the circumstance you're in and the more time goes by. If you're trying to find someone, let's say, who's not been tainted in your mind by these sexual things, if you want to get married, you want to have kids, you want to continue the civilization and raise up children to the Lord. I'm just saying, I mean, I've been around, I mean, a lot of church ministry, and you may be limited to people that have a past of some kind. The question you should be asking is, are they washed, as the scripture says? Would they make a good husband or wife? Are they repentant about those things? Have they forsaken those things? To what extent do those things still affect them, right? Those are the questions that you ask, and that's something for prudence. So I think those are the main things that I wanted to share. I think as a man, you have to deal with what's in front of you. And this is, you can't be, I think it's kind of effeminate to make the idealized world the enemy of the actual world that you live in. You are set in a certain set of circumstances that God has put you in, right? We all were. We have to make stew with the kinds of ingredients that we're given. And that doesn't mean we don't try hard to make sure that we're following the Lord and reflecting his law in every possible way we can, and finding someone who is going to, let's say, have a higher likelihood of sharing our values, raising up godly children, and hasn't been gone in as deep in sinful activities as others. I think that's actually important. I think you should be looking for, I mean,================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================ remember, there was sort of like a squeamishness sometimes about the innocent church girl, because, you know, is she even going to want to be intimate, that kind of thing. And I'm a pretty big defender of the church girl who might not be as socialized, who's kind of innocent. I actually think that can be a very beautiful thing, and we should protect innocence. So nothing against that. I'm just saying, though, if you've been trying for years to find a wife and no one is meeting your standard, and you've looked everywhere and you're really honest or trying, you may want to examine that. You have to deal with the world that you actually live in, right? So I hope no, I'm just envisioning now someone's going to like settle because of what they heard me say and then blame me for it. Or maybe they'll thank me for it. Who knows? Maybe like this was the hump you needed to get over, was you were just afraid of making that decision because not everything was perfect. Well, surprise, you don't live in a perfect world, right? But I do think that's a manly characteristic. As a man, what are you going to do about it? So that, you know, the environment isn't what you would prefer. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to navigate it? How are you going to conquer as a man? How are you going to find, who finds a wife finds a good thing? How are you going to keep looking? What tools are you going to use? And then I think the need for marriage is great. So this also affects my reaction to this. If the pool is that narrow, and this is just what we're dealing with, a lot of broken people, both men and women, and the need for marriage is so great, not just for the continuance of civilization, but also because it's just a good end in and of itself, according to the Lord, then many of us are going to have to work with people that have a past, even if you yourself don't have one. And I know many marriages like this and many that have been quite successful. So that's my two cents on it. And I'm willing to take any pushback. I'm willing to consider things maybe I haven't. But boy, I mean, I'm getting raked over the coals for just by some people for this, which is kind of a little disheartening, I suppose. We'll start with, should I even say your name? See, one of the things going into this discussion, I noticed a lot of people were using very racy, colorful language, just throwing it out there so casually. You know, Christians, even pastors, some of them, throwing out very colorful language that I would reserve for. I want some words. I want social shame. All right. There should be social shame for doing things like evil things. There should be I'm not saying just laws. I'm saying there should be a stigma around those things, but then there should also be forgiveness and all the rest. But I do think there needs to be a pressure not to do bad things. I believe in that. But I also think you way overdo it when you take those words that are, I don't even want to say them because, you know, my parents taught me to be respectful of my language. So there's certain words to describe women who have been loose that you save for women who are egregious examples of it. You don't just cast it. You don't just like call everything that so that it loses its power. That's all I'll say about that. I was a little surprised at some of that. But anyway, it's not really, it's, this guy, it's not his Twitter handle. It's just, I don't know why you chose Fartwiff, dude, but Fartwiff is the name of the person's anonymous account who's commenting. People losing their minds should look at Jesus' attitude when he didn't go and try to help the Pharisee and clean cut rich people. Yeah, I mean, he chose to eat with them, and obviously he didn't get married, but he definitely, people he chose as his disciples, the people, I mean, it's forgiven sinners. That's the question, really. That's the main thing. Cosmic Treason says, I've been dragged kicking and screaming out of a mainly open viewpoint where I was open to women with a sexual past. I am firm, not because of pride, but because of everything I have learned. Well, that could be. I do suspect, that's a good point, Cosmic Treason. Thank you for bringing that up. I do suspect there are people that have very bad experiences, and that is also going into this. Let me just say one thing. It does not necessarily mean you will not have a bad experience just because someone doesn't have those things too. Not to make you too freaked out, but I have seen many, and I'm telling you many, kind of startling, to be honest with you. I was talking to, what was it, Michael Foster, I think it was, about this not that long ago. It is crazy to me the amount of church girls who will get married, come from great, it seems like on the outside, the good homes, and then, you know, they're halfway through the marriage or something, they, middle-aged woman, they lose it. And it's like, and they go do, you know, what an OnlyFans person would do, basically. And it's like, and the husbands are left with the kids trying to, like, this is going into like the reviling wife stuff and all that. I don't know why that is. I have friends that have gone through the ringer on this kind of thing. And so you the place of safety is evaluating level of repentance. There's sanctification, walk with the Lord, maturity, what friends say, get godly advice, pastoral advice and counseling, all of that. Wisdom is needed in all of these things. And yes, I think ideally it would be great if you could marry someone in that doesn't have these other things, these past things they've been part of. I'm sure the people who are part of that, who are Christians, also wish that wasn't the case. But you're not always safe, even if you get someone who's a church girl who's, I say church girl, not as a pejorative, by the way. I actually think that's a good thing. But someone who may be sheltered, that, I don't know. I don't know what it is, guys. I don't know what it is. All right. Sorry not to say, an OnlyFans creator has possibility of being a virgin, then what? Yeah, I mean, it's possible. They're still, I mean, the thing with that is you have to realize they put their body out there online, which apparently 40% of Gen Z's already been doing. They've been putting their body out there. So don't be surprised if a picture comes up of this person without their clothes on. I think that stigma will actually go down in some ways as it becomes more common. People won't be destroyed by it because it's like, well, everyone has that. Anyway. Okay, let's see. Stryker says, I think there are two explanations for those that oppose your viewpoint. Either they are bad actors, or in John's case, just naive. I don't know if he's saying I'm naive. or I don't think John's naive. He knows. Okay, thanks for defending me. Von Brightoff Gohard says, it stinks being single at 31, but hopefully I can find a decent woman either around here in Indiana or at a singles mixer. Everyone right now, pray for Von Brightoff Gohard, his anonymous account, that he would be able to find a wonderful woman and that they'd have a wonderful marriage. Salome says, the hung about marriage is it's a commit to the unknown, thus a covenant, includes sins committed after the wedding. This is not that simple. Yeah, it is complicated. That's why a simple tweet like that isn't meant, in my mind, to be a broad statement about all the advice there is in choosing a mate or something like that. It's not comprehensive. All right. Let's see. Other comments. This is our last subject, so these are the last comments I'm getting to. Gumby says, I think the Catholic analogy to sin is good and is relevant here. Sin is like hammering a nail in the wall. God always removes a nail, but he doesn't always fill in the hole. That's true. You'll have scars at times. You'll have scars, but scar tissue is a healing balm. It is a healing, but you carry some of those things with you. That's true. That's why I think every parent who goes through stuff doesn't want their kids to go through it. Andrew asks, at what point is a civilization beyond survival and salvation? At some point when immorality goes on long enough, judgment falls. Agreed. I think we're on. I don't think anything seems in my mind, even if there's changing flavors, I don't see any change with social morality, which I think is one of the main barometers, if not the main barometer. It is. If social morality goes down the tank, if what people do sexually, if what people do, trying to think like coarseness in just their language and their lack of love for others, their arrogance, their pride, lovers of self, if all of that stuff is just unchecked, the vice list just keeps going. Yeah, I think that you're done at a certain, there is a point of no return. Are we at that point? You know, I certainly hope not. So we keep fighting, but we always fight, right? For whatever's coming next, we're going to fight for that too. We just, God put us here, right? So what option do we have? Fathers have two options. Cosmic Treason says, invest in young men to make them attractive to their daughters, be passive and accept a larger age cap because only older men will be prepared for marriage. That's already happening, unfortunately. And age gaps, I think, are becoming more common a little bit because of that. I haven't seen a stat on that, though, so it's just me observing. Hi, John. I'm a baby boomer, says Steve. Born in 1963, I had a life of addiction before I was apprehended by the Lord. I love that, apprehended. God gave me a wife who never had addictions. She is struck by me through a lot of rough times. She's stuck by me. Praise God for that. I'm sure you're very grateful for that. And yeah, I'm grateful for that too, Steve. Let's see. T. James Boone says, marrying a proud and submissive church girl can cause you more grief than marrying a repentant and contrite former OnlyFans and now Christian girl. Same tweet, but with a more helpful emphasis. Yeah. It's more of a wisdom prudence. At least it emphasizes, that's sort of how I always took it, but that emphasizes the wisdom prudence end of this. And Salome says, thanks everyone for a great conversation and John for a good discussion. Well, thank you. Thank you for participating, everyone. I hope that was somewhat helpful. I feel like there's more I should say about this, but I'm still half scratching my head as to why the drastic and hard denunciations of Protestia for this, or at least denunciations of the tweet. It's just a little odd to me. It's just, you could critique it without calling them names and all the rest, but it's where we are, guys. It's where we are. Don't forget men's retreat coming up September. You're going to want to go musicandmasculinity.com, musicandmasculinity.com. Would love to see you there. And also, if you're interested in knowing more about Christian Zionism, my article went live today for American Reformer on that topic. So God bless. More coming. Bye now.